Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity. If you want to grow the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode, number 455, which features a conversation with Dhawal Shah, founder and CEO of Class Central, which Dhawal describes as a TripAdvisor for online education. Class Central aggregates reviews of hundreds of thousands of courses from platforms all over the world, bringing together the Learningverse in a single, searchable, discoverable interface. Jeff, tell us a bit about what you and Dhawal talk about.
Sure. So Dhawal started Class Central as a side project in 2011, and he found himself in the right place at the right time as massive open online courses, or MOOCs, took off in 2012. Dhawal has paid close attention to this industry ever since, and I think his take on the industry and his analysis of the offerings and increasingly the business side of big learning is incredibly valuable to learning businesses because Udemy, Coursera, edX, and the like are part of the competitive landscape. Your learners might well be weighing your catalog against the catalogs of those big learning providers.
And you cover quite a bit of ground with Dhawal talking about community in the context of online courses, business models, including pricing and the relevant benefits of business-to-business models versus business-to-consumer, and the importance of partnerships. So without further ado, let's roll the conversation with Dhawal Shah.
Really right after you started, was kind of the year of the MOOC. And I can remember back then that MOOCs really started with a lot of hype. MOOCs were going to save the world, basically. A lot of enthusiasm. I mean, what do you think, looking back on that early enthusiasm, what did people get right and what did they get wrong about where online learning was headed?
I always approach it from a learner perspective, right? I was not in the industry. I was just a student. I just built it for my own needs. So to me, like what MOOCs as a learner experience got it right was it was a real university course. So there was a difficulty level there. It had some hard deadlines. There were like graded assignments, which you had to finish. There was a TED Talk by Daphne Koller, one of the co-founders of Coursera back then, where they showed like actually the engagement went up on the weekends because people are completing assignments. And so we would be on the forums helping each other out. Any question I had, somebody had already asked and answered. So I think the original MOOCs accidentally got it right was the community, the shared experience, because there were so few courses and so much media attention. So a lot of people were funneled into a fewer courses. So, but they didn't have a business model back then. And as they started trying to monetize it, scale it, they launch more courses, the sessions become more readily available, so that the community slowly diluted and got thinner and thinner. And eventually, I don't think outside of like some outlier courses, the Coursera edX style community is pretty much non-existent, like what I experienced. So, and since, you know, they went the VC funded route and all that, they were selling a hype. They were selling, they all like, I think the Coursera and Udacity also, and edX also started like a side project. Right? They just launched something, it did really well. And then they tried to build a narrative, how data, we'll know through data that, you know, how learners learn and everything could be solved because of that. And, but that never really panned out. Like, I think what data allows you to figure out if your course is really bad, but like how to make a good course is still a difficult challenge, and it requires a bit of art and science. And there is some sort of non-tangible feeling when there's a video, like if you can connect with the instructor. One of the things that I remember from the MOOC era was like the courses were produced as we were taking the course. So you had like some sort of a feedback loop because you're taking week one and the instructor is shooting week two. So they are taking your feedback and comments and applying in week two. So it became like a vast shared experience. And I think that was just accidental. And I think when they started trying to make it like more professional, make these organizations more revenue driven and be sustainable and get VC return kind of scale, then the community got lost.
I think that is an interesting comment because I can remember, you know, even before the Courseras and the edXs came along, and MOOCs pre-existed that. I can remember people like Stephen Downs and George Siemens were doing early versions of MOOC, and they were big on that whole concept of it really was the community kind of informing the course to develop in the right way and to really serve the learner needs in that way. And it feels like, yes, a lot of that has been lost along the way. Is that kind of your perspective?
Yeah, like especially for scale platforms, there are always some smaller platforms that are like trying like Discord and other ways to do community. But like for platforms that truly target scale, they have to somehow remove the human out of the equation, whether it be the instructors or even the students, you know, like the course nowadays, like a course on Udemy or Coursera doesn't get better the more students it has. But before, the community actually made the courses better. And the courses used to be even more difficult because the community, there was a community support, which is not the same as asking ChatGPT. And the community support is like a social contract.
Right. And I mean, that's obviously a strategic and an operational decision on the part of those big providers to evolve in that way, understandable for achieving scale. I mean, what other kinds of strategic decisions do you think those big providers have made along the way that maybe other types of potentially smaller continuing education providers should take note of?
I think there's probably like someone like Coursera or Udemy, there's probably a lot to learn from their interfaces because they probably spend A/B testing. And, but I think overall, I think the market, they're more of a marketing partnerships company. Like Coursera relies on their partnerships and builds great landing pages and marketing. So I think the platform itself hasn't evolved that much. I think so I'm not sure like what, you know, small business can learn right. is because they have to grow every year, like for the sake of growth. I think that's the onus on them. Now they're a public company. So that's something else is driving their decisions and it's not purely the learning experience. And small players actually have the liberty to, like, if you're like small, bootstrap, profitable, like Class Central is, we have the liberty to focus on just the things that matter to the learners. The other learnings that I have seen them is like monetization, pricing, and, you know, you can sort of, they focus a lot on intro courses. So you can know like what an intro course charge and like, there's also like how they evolved from like completely free. Like the day one, they were completely free certificates. Then after a while, they put like the free certificates behind the paywall. And then eventually they put the graded assignments behind paywall. So that shows like the priority of learners. What are they most willing to pay for? It's the graded the certificate and the graded assignments. And the content comes next. So Udemy has a paywall on content, but Coursera, like it's majority still a freemium platform where you can audit a course, but you pay for like additional features. So far, right. I can't predict the future.
That is interesting though. You can look at what they're doing and sort of, you know, read between the lines. And I think the point that smaller providers should look at what those companies that have to scale, that have to potentially satisfy shareholders or investors. If you're a smaller organization, you may be able to do some things differently because you don't have to do that. And that's an important point for listeners to keep in mind. These large providers, the Udemy's and the Courseras, I mean, they obviously have to attract a lot of students. They have to get a lot of enrollments. I mean, what is there anything to learn from that? Is there anything that you see them do particularly well to pull students to them?
I think for Udemy, like, and like Coursera, like for Coursera, it's the partnerships. Their formula is generally a brand name, like university or a tech company and a hot topic and a certificate. So that's how they sort of, those are the three elements for Coursera. And for Udemy, generally, it's like the content. They're focusing on in-demand content. So a Coursera might do like data analytics, or you know, design or user interface. So they go, because of certification, they go like a higher up in sort of the learning journey, like more around conceptual, and while Udemy focuses more on tools. Like they both want to do each what they do each other, but Udemy is like, you can learn design at Coursera and Figma on Udemy. So, and then that informs like the pricing. Udemy has to charge somewhere $10 to $15, but Coursera can charge like $50 to $60 a month. So Coursera, because of the brand name, it's a premium platform. And it's not premium compared to like a lot of like boutique, small, you know, they always like the live session. I'm just talking in on-demand world. That's how sort of they have divided their lines. Right. The subscription for Udemy is now like $20 or something like that, while Coursera is like $50, $60 a month, Coursera Plus. So that clear, even though Udemy has a significantly bigger catalog,
right,
sort of the shows a premium on the brand.
Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep expertise in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity. There has been more of a shift over time, seemingly from B2C to B2B in this world, to varying degrees. Some are, you know, the degree to which, say, Udemy is focusing on B2B might be different from the degree to which Coursera is. I mean, do you think that's where all of these companies are headed? And how do you see that sort of enterprise opportunity versus the direct to learner, that more B2C opportunity?
I think the challenge with B2C is like you have to make that sale again and again.
Yeah.
Like at a Coursera scale or Udemy scale. Like Udemy has like a number they share in their, what do you call, their earnings report and all that, which is like the monthly average buyers. And the monthly average buyers is above a million people. So it's a lot of small money that you're collecting from a million people every month. You're impacted by like market trends, change in currency rates, and because they're a global company. So B2C, and they have also done a lot of deals over the years, like coupon codes and all that. And they have like created an audience who is addicted to like buying stuff for cheap. Like they wait for these deals and discounts. They have pulled back on all that. So I think there is an upper limit to how many people are willing to buy a course in today's world. And I think Udemy has not scaled in the last, Udemy's revenue peaked in 2020, the consumer revenue, and has been declining since then. And that's why they, for them, like the enterprise has grown tremendously in the last 4 years. And I think the challenge comes is like, I feel like I have a theory that the B2C pricing needs to be much cheaper, but because of the enterprise play here, they cannot actually reduce the B2C price, or companies will be like, hey, go to your employees and just buy it cheaper.
Right.
Like, right. So I think that pushes the B2C price, and it creates a tension where like they can't grow B2C without hurting B2B, especially I feel like true for Udemy. Coursera is already premium, and the challenge they face is one of the earnings call, the CEO or the CFO said, like, they don't sell company-wide licenses. They sell to a small team. Because of the sort of, it's more expensive, while Udemy generally sells more, you know.
Right.
And even from B2B, they're going to enterprise. Udemy has like kind of their strategies to go higher, bigger and bigger companies. And they're like, they've removed the focus from small business. So I think in a way, like it to me, it feels more of an addiction of revenue that they have, the numbers they have to be grow. So I think it's natural for them to go to one person and get a few millions of dollars multi-year, you know, and instead of going to get the same amount, you have to go to 10,000 people. And
right.
People are fickle, and they do have a great marketing engine. So the profit margins on B2C are less for Udemy. Subscription, they keep like, they will eventually keep 85% of the revenue. But for B2C, they keep like maybe 50 to 60% of the revenue. So overall, everything is for them works for enterprise. So, and same is true for Coursera to a certain extent, but Coursera has a label. But their marketing and their branding and the certifications are much stronger in B2C. So they do much better in B2C than B2B.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask how important in that B2B or broader enterprise market are the credentials and the certificates, or is it mainly just about the content there?
Yeah, I have this analysis where I wrote content versus credential, where Coursera is a credential company while Udemy is content. So that's why Coursera does so well in B2C, while Udemy does so well in B2B, because Udemy is selling content and companies for their employees are maybe more concerned about content over credential. They want the skills, unless you're in like some sort of very specific you need for compliance or, but if you just want somebody to know Figma or some of your people know to Excel. So Udemy is a much better platform, much better license to give to your employees, while Coursera is also like a lot of our intro content, which is tied to a credential, which is like for job career seekers, career changers. So you kind of do like a Google certificate on Coursera for your next job, not for your current job.
Right.
While you might do a certain specific code, Excel or something for your current job from Udemy. So I think that's how I sort of place them. So the credential is much stronger in B2C, and that's why they've been able to grow their quarterly B2C revenue across more than 100 million.
Yeah.
While Udemy has struggled in the 70 to 80 range for a long time.
That's an interesting difference in analysis. And I remember reading that analysis of yours. We'll see if we can link to that in the show notes, because I think listeners should see it. You mentioned, all of these large online providers now are global companies. Pretty much they're attracting a lot of registrations, users from outside the U.S. How has that global growth gone? Have you seen them hit pitfalls in doing that? Or are they just, sort of automatically a magnet from people who want to participate in the content and the credentials that they're offering?
I think globally there is a lot more demand, but maybe less appetite to pay. So I looked into the 10Ks or annual reports of Coursera, Udemy and Duolingo, and basically Coursera's US revenues is like 54%, Duolingo is around 41-42%, and Udemy is like 36%. And one of the things, interesting things, they all say like no other country accounted for 10%, more than 10% of their revenue. And except Udemy in 2024, they mentioned like Japan accounted for more than 10% of the revenue. But I think that's an outlier. And I think they have a on-ground partnership that helps that. But you can make 60% up to 60% of your revenue outside, but at a country level, it's a small revenues and you have to really price it. Like I just came from India after 3 months and Udemy prices are significantly cheaper there. Like you can get a course for $3-$4, maybe a bit more, the same course in US, which will be well about $10. So overall, yeah, they have to really drastically cut the price to be more competitive in India and other places. Coursera is doing the same. So I think geo pricing, you have to do geo pricing, but you have to sell it a lot less. And then you have to sell it a lot more people, and the appetite to pay is even less there. So I think it's a challenge. And they have been able to grow a lot, but the most important market for each of them is like US.
Still the US, yeah. Okay. And you mentioned Duolingo in the mix there a minute ago. And when I think about companies that, are innovating with their platform or have an innovative platform, particularly at scale, Duolingo is one that tends to come to mind for me first. That they've always used it. They've always had a lot of machine learning under the hood. I assume are making a lot of use of AI at this point. How do you see AI impacting these large providers? Are they using it? I'm sure they're using it in their marketing, but are they using it in meaningful ways around sort of shaping the learning experience, evolving their platforms?
Yeah, I think the reason Gen AI works specifically for Duolingo, because they are more of a platform company, and they have been able to scale their content and they have been able to add features. Like Duolingo, you're not going to there to just watch a video, then quiz, while Udemy and Coursera have that problem of like they are a content company and they like to syndicate content from other places, make it really easy. So their platform like became more and more like, it's like a YouTube with few extra steps. That's how I define it. So they made the platform more and more simpler, and their content so far requires people attached to it or a brand attached to it. So I think they've added support, Coursera Coach or Udemy has, you know, like all of them are adding those features. It hasn't really impacted their bottom line. I don't see people like, wow, this is really helpful, because like a chatbot is a chatbot, and I would rather talk with ChatGPT than the chatbot inside of, like it's the same context, right? It's ChatGPT has probably injected way more data, or they're just using the same APIs. So in a way, they're not able to build meaningful experiences because they have sort of pulled back on the platform, you know, like making like specialized courses for a certain platform. What recently I've seen, like I'm not experienced, but like companies are trying to do role play. I think that's the word. They're trying to implement role play. And Udemy mentioned that they just launched the feature and 1,000 role plays were created by creators and all that. So I think their time will tell if this is a valuable feature and for learners to make it enough to pay for it, or, and honestly, why, maybe I can just use the audio mode on ChatGPT and do the role play myself and ask it to, you know, like, so I think they have to, like, what value can you add on top of the existing technology? Because the existing technology is so much heavy lifting. And then what value can you add on top of it that people will pay? Because it's expensive, those APIs.
Yeah.
Like if you sell a course for $10 and then add role play to it, it's cutting into your margins. And that's what happened in Duolingo, like, quarter ago, their stock fell because of the margins, and then they posted record growth and everything was fine. But the Duolingo Max, I think what they call for Super Max, and but whatever, like the one which has like video call and all other features, it's eating into their margins and making each user less profitable. So, but Duolingo is an extremely efficient marketing engine, which is profitable. So it's like still profitable. So for Coursera and Udemy, they don't probably have that margins. Their growth is stalled. So, I mean, Udemy makes like 800 million or something a year, and their market cap is 1 billion. So I think for them, it's AI, the Gen AI. It's been 2 years. It's been 2 years. Like 2023 was like when ChatGPT went viral, right? So these companies haven't meaningfully implemented anything that a user will like, let me go, I need to, you know. So, and they have the resources. Coursera has like 700-800 million in the bank. Udemy has like 300-400 million in the bank. And so I think we'll see. The Udemy CTO came back, or CEO, founder, right? One of the founders, he came back as a CTO, and he has announced that he's working on a bunch of features, and they're trying to get back to product innovation. All these companies, except Duolingo, have changed their CEOs too. So I think there might be a lag, and then we might see if they have something that I think they're focused on, like making content, like helping syllabus and other kinds of features they've added. But like for a learner, pure learner, is there something that's like worth paying? I personally really haven't seen that.
Where are these companies going to go? I mean, maybe leaving Duolingo aside, you know, when I look at like a Udemy or Coursera or, you know, edX, any of them, it feels like they've just kind of plateaued. Like you know what to expect when you go to that type of platform. It hasn't really changed in a while now. And it's sort of, at least from my perspective, you're much more close to this than I am. It's not clear to me how they would change to necessarily sort of create more value in a way that's going to be viable for them from a business perspective. But what do you think? I mean, is there a way past what strikes me as sort of a plateau right now?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers tell that. Udemy said like 1% or negative growth for this year. Coursera is like 5% growth. So in a way, the numbers are plateaued. But I think these platforms are pretty efficient and profitable. They're unprofitable on paper because of like they're investing in other things, but they really want to be profitable. So they have plateaued in terms of revenues and in terms of like, because they're a public company, it's a bigger issue. But if they were a private company, they would be a very healthy business. sustainable business, gave it up to obviously reduce staff and other kinds of things. So I think like I've been waiting for 2 years, like what I think they owe their growth to not product, but like more of a marketing, like for Coursera, it's the marketing and partnerships. They use that university brand. They built a strong brand, and then they took that brand and then started partnership with tech companies. And that's been the, I personally believe at this point, Coursera makes more money revenues from their, at least in B2C, from their company certificates or professional certificates than their university. I think that's been their growth engine for the last few years. So they might have a plateaued even before the pandemic, and the pandemic gave them a boost and sort of just increased the height of the plateau. And for Udemy, they just made sure they reached the plateau very quickly in B2C and took a while to get into B2B. So yeah, I'm also waiting for them to launch like the next, like a big feature or the next. With Udemy, they're still like, hey, if I want to learn something that was announced last week or a few weeks ago, like Udemy is like the cutting edge.
Right.
And Coursera is like UI, UX, or some sort of like data analytics. Some like, I want to spend 6 months on something, 3 to 6 months on it. So that's where I would go for Coursera. And they keep launching new certificates and new partnership. But I think the rate of launching these new certificates, professional certificate, you know, then the older ones kind of expire, right? In a way.
Right.
Because they might be less relevant, older. So it's not fast enough for them to grow the revenue, because it still takes a while to get a Microsoft or a Google to create, even if Coursera is funding it to a certain extent, it still takes a while to create a 3 to 6 month certificate. They can't really scale that quickly.
So if you were advising a smaller provider of online education, or maybe somebody who wants to start up an online education business, and you know, and Udemy or Coursera are out there and sort of overlapping, semi-competitive in their space, can potentially take away some of their prospective learners. What would you advise them to do to kind of stand out, differentiate themselves, be able to compete in that environment?
I think do not compete head on with pricing. I'd say that do not, like they are on-demand platforms. So their on-demand content would definitely be much cheaper, scaled platforms. So I think definitely do not like compete head on with them. I feel like there's plenty of opportunity. If you can get your marketing and you can have a steady stream of traffic and people coming to you, I think there's plenty of opportunity for small providers, small platforms to create and create a more comprehensive program. And like, because all of these players sometimes give you a lot of videos, but they're very simple and they don't have a community. So communities can be a big differentiator. Support, they tend to be very like isolating platforms. Like they don't have webinars. They don't have like places to connect with other learners, other humans. So they are very agnostic. Like the professors are chair, like they put the course on instructors and they're not involved at all. So I think smaller platforms still have like the ability to interact. So get people through a much longer commitment. At this point, it's still difficult for a learner to do a 6 month course, like the most motivated people do, but just like doing 6 months of self-paced on-demand learning on your own. So having some sort of other ways to like keep them engaged, and you don't have to be like, it doesn't have to be technology. Mm-hmm. It can be just be human. And yeah, I think there is plenty, and domain expertise always matter. These are very agnostic platforms.
Right. Like very generic.
Yeah, they will release a course and keep it for years and years. But if you are like a small in the industry and all that, you can provide the learners with updates and like, hey, this is what's happening in the industry. And you can like show your expertise, not just through teaching, but also through the knowledge of the industry. And I think that's what I do a certain extent too, is like, hey, we have a catalog, but here's some analysis, what we know, because we build this catalog, keep an eye on the platform. We also know, like, and for us, it's been a very successful strategy, because that's how people know about us, Class Central, and like the brand becomes stronger. A catalog is very passive. You keep putting courses, people come and search. But the report where we do analysis and other kinds of articles, it's an active entity. It's a way for us to engage with the world. And I've seen multiple companies over the years who spend so much time building the catalog, but then once they launch it, they're like, they have nothing to share, nothing to say. So I think there are ways to keep the engagement going, build a community that the big players would never want to do that.
Well, we're switching gears a bit to wrap up. We have a tradition of asking guests on Leading Learning about their own approaches to lifelong learning. So I would love to hear about some of your habits and practices, maybe some of the resources you look to. And I wonder, do you spend much of your time in these, you know, Udemy or Coursera courses, or are you going for other ways of supporting your own learning?
Yeah, I think it's all goals and phases. So like what I like about Udemy and Coursera is structured. And generally Coursera more, it's like always like the academia way of teaching and pointing to research papers and all that. So it feels pretty cool to me. So yeah, we used to run like a community inside Class Central where we did courses together, like a study group. And we also launched, did some product, you know, where we did like, we called it cohorts because everybody was into cohorts a few years ago, where we just like took a course online. We put a start date and then and discussed it as a community. So that's when I finished a lot of courses with the community. And like at this point, you kind of do what you need to do. Like yeah. You need to get, I have sort like if I need to do like a Google Sheet formula or something, you know, so with ChatGPT, I can just ask it. And so yeah, I think like we have to figure out like, how do you keep learning? Like it's easy to do now, but that doesn't mean you know the topic and you might be stuck at a beginner in everything for, you know, because right. You're just asking question to a chatbot and it gives you the answer. So I think that's something I'm trying to figure out is like, where should I invest so that I know? Mm-hmm. And usually what I've known from myself is like, the more I know about a topic, the better I can use Gen AI for it. I can use it in coding in the languages that I use. But if I try to do an experiment and just start something in a different language and build an app from scratch or something, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
So I think I still like the writing we do, we try to push for human written content as much as possible. I still believe in like the human expertise, and it doesn't scale, but also it allows you being a small business, it allows me the freedom to be more creative and talk about the things and do the things that I enjoy.
We're not done quite yet. Keep listening for our recap.
At leadinglearning.com/episode455, you'll find show notes, a transcript, options for subscribing to the podcast, and links to the Class Central website and DeWall on LinkedIn.
And if you enjoy the Leading Learning podcast, we'd love for you to share an episode with a colleague or two who you think would benefit from listening.
So, Salisa, when you think about the conversation with DeWall, what are you taking away?
Well, I think his take on the value of community as part of learning is something I can really wholeheartedly endorse, and I appreciate his perspective on community as a potential differentiator when learners might be comparing a big learning option to something offered by a learning business.
I also think the content versus credential lens is potentially useful to learning businesses in looking at their offerings and assessing where they're putting the emphasis for individual products and their portfolio overall.
Yeah, and then also DeWall's comments about the addiction of revenue, that pressure that big learning providers feel to grow and grow revenue, also really reinforces for me the emphasis that we put on reach, revenue, and impact. Truly successful learning businesses are going to focus on all three and not give undue weight to any one, even that important revenue one.
So that's it for this episode. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.